Chapter 27. So began the longest afternoon and night of my life. The old farmhouse was empty without my mother in it. Jethro rubbed against my legs, meowing. I carried him with me as I walked through the empty rooms. Common sense told me Mom wasn't in any of the rooms, but I checked every nook and cranny, including the closets. My cat's furry warmth in my arms was somehow comforting. Putting Jethro down on his cushion, I went to the phone and began dialing my mother's friends. I heard the fear in Jackson Connor's voice and had a feeling that Grant was going to have company in his search, whether he wanted any or not. The list of those who loved Flora Tucker was long. I called all of her church friends, even people considered to be only acquaintances. Our pastor, Don Huggins, said he was going to set up a prayer chain immediately and would join the search party. I hesitated before calling Georgia and Carolina Jenkins. I didn't want to alarm them, but at this point my concern for my mother outweighed concern for their aging hearts. Miss Georgia wanted to come right over, but I told her there was a slim chance that Mom might show up on her doorstep. She seemed satisfied with that. Last, I called Burke Hopkins. The phone rang 10 times, but Burke didn't answer. Hanging up, I decided I would try again later. The old yellow coffee pot was half full. I poured a cup, microwaved it for a few seconds, and sat down at the table. Something hard pressed against my leg. I ran my hand into my pocket and pulled out the dog tag. In the shock of my mother's disappearance, I had forgotten about it. Now I sat with it in my fingers, turning it over and over. This relic from World War I had once been worn by a young soldier named Markham Caldfell. I tried to visualize this first husband of my grandmother's. Was he tall? Dark? Had he loved Grace Wolfe? And had she cared for him? Surely this was so, else why had they married? Since she was engaged to George Daniels, Markham must have been a dashing sort of person who swept Grace off her feet. I slipped the dog tag back into the pocket of my jeans. Sitting alone in an empty house, waiting for the phone to ring or someone to knock on the door was driving me crazy. I scooted back my chair and went to the drawer where we kept our notepads and pencils. Carrying them back to the table with me, I sat down and started to write. I had always been able to think better with a pencil in my hand, and if I could force my thoughts away from my mother for a few brief minutes, perhaps time would seem to pass faster. I jotted down names and recent occurrences which had turned my mother's and my lives topsy-turvy. 1. Digging the foundation for our new house. 2. Finding the gun and Bible record. 3. Stuart Woods' offer to buy our land. 4. Mom finding the old journal. 5. Eileen's visit. 6. Disappearance of the gun and journal. 7. Eileen's death. 8. Pat finding the old photograph. 9. Confrontation with the Jenkins sisters. 10. Someone shooting at me. 11. Finding Markham Caldfell's grave. 12. Mom's disappearance. I looked at the list and willed my racing thoughts to slow down. I had to concentrate. The series of calamities began with Cub Dabbins excavating the foundation of our new house. Somehow building it was a threat to somebody. Who? Eileen? Maybe. If we built it, she would lose her right to the land, wouldn't she? Stuart Wood? He didn't want us to build because he had offered an astronomical sum to tempt us to sell. But why would that matter to him, a complete stranger? None of it made any sense to me. I couldn't think straight. The specter of Mom's disappearance crowded out all other thoughts. I threw down my pencil, pushed the paper and cold coffee away, and began pacing. At 7 o'clock that night, I was still pacing the floor, alternately praying and crying, when someone knocked. I ran to the front door, nearly tripping over Jethro. Pat Harris stood in the halo of brightness from the porch light. "Come in, Pat. I'm so glad to see you." I held the door wide. Pat carried a bowl in her right hand, but she hugged me with her left arm. "I figured you might need company. Have you had supper?"
No. Guess I haven't even thought about it."
"That's what I was afraid of. I brought some of my good potato soup."
"Oh, Pat, I couldn't eat it. Thank you, though. You're a wonderful friend."
"Now, Darcy, I'm telling you what Flora would say if she were here. You should eat. You don't want to get sick just when your mom needs you to be strong."
That made sense. I followed Pat into the kitchen. She set the covered plastic bowl on the table and pulled two soup bowls out of the cabinet. I opened the silverware drawer and put spoons beside the bowls. We sat down and silently began to eat. Amazingly, the hot soup was good. I ate every drop in my bowl.
"Thanks, Pat," I said. "I guess Grant and Jim came to your house to get Murphy?"
"Yes, they took the dog and told me a little about what happened. Jasper isn't home. He's out wandering again, and I knew you shouldn't be alone at a time like this. I'm going to spend the night."
"You don't have to do that. I appreciate it, but I'll be fine." Pat carried the empty bowls to the sink and rinsed them.
"No arguing, young lady. I'll make a bed on the sofa."
I got up from the table and hugged her. Although I had cried most of the afternoon, I found more tears sliding down my face.
"I can see why you are Mom's best friend."
Pat sniffled and patted my shoulders.
"We'll get her back, Darcy. Flora is going to be all right."
I went to the linen closet, pulled out a pillow and blankets, and put them on the sofa.
"Your bed is ready when you get tired, Pat, but feel free to read or just sit with me and watch the fire."
"I'll sit for a while, Darcy, thanks, but before I do, I want to give you something else. I found this under the mattress in Jasper's room. I can't tell you how ashamed I am to admit my son must have taken it from your house."
She reached into her oversized handbag and pulled out a book. On its faded brown cover in big numerals was the date, 1918.
I swallowed twice before I could croak. "It's Granny Grace's journal."
She nodded.
"That it is." Her voice was grim. "I just read the first page, Darcy, to make sure it was the one that Miss Grace wrote. I'm sure you aren't going to sleep tonight, so I thought you might want to read it. Maybe it'll have some answers for you."
I clutched it to my heart and nodded. I couldn't speak. Pat sat down in Mom's recliner. I opened the journal and at once was transported back into the past century. The blaze in the fireplace cracked and popped, a log fell, and the fire burned down to smoldering embers. None of it mattered to me. I was lost in another time, in the lives of other people. I didn't even know when Pat left the chair and lay down on the sofa.